This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Howard Woldridge. He's a retired police detective. He's co-founder of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, also known as LEAP. He's currently a lobbyist for LEAP in the U.S. Congress. And he was first on the Radio Cafe a little over 10 years ago when he rode his horse, Misty, into the parking lot of the Santa Fe Baking Company, tied her to the bike rack, and came in to talk about his journey cross country on horseback to talk about the futility of the drug war. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good to be back with you. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
So I wanted to talk today about a number of things having to do with the trend toward legalizing marijuana, sometimes for recreational use, sometimes for medical use.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado has now had 2 years of legalized marijuana, and we want to talk about how they're doing. What's the good mm-hmm. news? What's the bad news in Colorado?
Well, despite what the Chicken Little told us 3 years ago before the vote, the sky hasn't fallen. Colorado is not, repeat, not on fire. The news is mostly cheerful. Most importantly, for I think the majority of your audience, the consumption of marijuana by teenagers, high school seniors, has remained constant over the last 3 years since the 2012 vote. So they, despite the idea they get the wrong message, it's safe, it's legal, they're going to increase their use. The Chicken Littles were wrong. The teenagers in Colorado continue to smoke as much as they did before, not more, not less. And past that, of course, you've had a slight decrease in felony crime, misdemeanor crime, a slight decrease in fatal accidents, which, again, the Chicken Little said would go up with everybody being stoned and crashing their cars. And unemployment is down to 4.2% below the national average, almost a 2% drop, by the way. And that's because tourism is flourishing, using the words of Governor Hickenlooper, in Colorado. So the metrics, by far, are absolutely overwhelmingly positive. And that bodes well for the rest of the nation to go Colorado.
Let's talk about each of those things a little bit. The use of marijuana by teenagers has not gone up.
Mm-hmm.
It was expected to go up, but, I mean, one of the things that we hear about teenagers is that it's actually easier for them to get illegal drugs than to get alcohol, because alcohol mm-hmm. is actually regulated and you need an ID to buy it, and it's hard to get somebody to buy it for you, and they're in trouble if they do,
mm-hmm.
whereas drugs are readily available. To the extent that teens in Colorado are using marijuana, are they acquiring it the same ways that they always have, namely illegally?
Well, yes and no. The teens today in Colorado, some still buy their marijuana traditionally from friends who get it from black market sources, from illicit markets and illicit grows. And then a number of them, however, are choosing another path, which is an older brother, older sister, buy it at a legal store and then sell it to their younger brothers, younger sisters. The same as when I was 16, Mary Charlotte, under full disclosure, I wanted to get drunk at 16 in Panama City, Florida. And my supplier was my older brother, who went to the 7-Eleven, bought a case of beer, and I ended up paying for it. So all of this is illegal and should stay illegal, but that is also happening in Colorado today, where these kids are getting at least a safer product, because we know this marijuana sold in a state-regulated store is pure marijuana and not cut or anything added to it like PCP or other really bad drugs.
Car crashes are down, or fatal car crashes are down 1%, which means it's basically the same. It hasn't increased, it hasn't decreased by any margin. There have been various studies about whether marijuana affects driving and how it affects driving. What do we know about that?
Well, certainly marijuana does impact your driving, and I urge all of your listeners to drive absolutely sober from any drug. The good news is that the National Highway Safety Traffic Administration came out with a comprehensive study earlier this year that said, overall, there is no statistical variance between a person who is sober And those people have used a little bit of marijuana and driven down the road. There's a lot of reasons to that, but the federal government has come out and said plainly and simply that there is no way to associate smoking and driving to be anywhere near as bad as drinking and driving. That's the most important takeaway.
Felony crime and misdemeanor crimes were both down. Felony crime down 5%, misdemeanor down 10% in 2014 in Colorado, the first year of legalization. Does that have anything to do with marijuana?
Short answer is my analysis is no. Crime has been dropping across America now for, I think, about the past 20-odd years. So this just continued a national trend of slightly lower crime rates. What's important is the Chicken Littles, the people like Kevin Sabat and Sam, which is Sensible Approaches to Marijuana, police chiefs and sheriffs in Colorado, predicted a large increase in violent and misdemeanor crime. Both of these predictions turned out to be false. That's the reason that's more important is because the other side was predicting an increase in crime when, in fact, there was a decrease, which basically means that, again, the opening of the stores in January of 2014 has had essentially zero impact on crime rates in Colorado.
Another piece of what's happening in Colorado that really speaks to the work that you spent your career doing, namely law enforcement, was that $60 million in Colorado was saved in law enforcement costs. What does that mean? What does that look like?
Well, the year before legalization, there was approximately 30,000 arrests for marijuana. Each one of these arrests has to be dealt with by both the police department internally and then by the court system, by judges, by prosecutors. All of that is now gone from 30,000 down to 2,000. The 2,000 being composed of people who are 18, 19, and 20 who are found with marijuana, and the police officer takes action either to issue a ticket or to actually physically arrest the guy. So this is a tremendous drop in the need for court time, for prosecutor time, for probation officers, police time, secretary time. All this stuff adds up to roughly a $60 million savings for the taxpayers in Colorado by not processing these simple marijuana arrests.
Which really is what you've been talking about all along, which is the futility of the war on drugs and the tremendous amount of time that police officers spend on this that they could really be putting toward other things. So basically, police officers in Colorado now have a chance to go after other kinds of crime.
Indeed. For me, it's never been so much about the money. It's been about the misallocation of police resources to go after a local Willie Nelson or Snoop Dogg or Cheech and Chong versus the drunk driver who actually killed 400 people in Colorado last year, or the pedophile in the chat room going after our young boys and girls to hopefully meet them in the chat room and then, of course, meet in real life where really bad things happen. So, and then, of course, at the federal level, in the age of ISIS, we still have thousands of well-trained federal agents chasing a green plant versus people who want to blow us up at a marathon or at a Christmas party. So this is the great tragedy as these wonderfully trained and motivated police officers go after the wrong thing.
So let's talk about employment. Unemployment in Colorado dropped quite a bit, and not only marijuana jobs, like directly working in dispensaries and growing places and stuff like that, but also tourism jobs are up. Talk about that in more detail. What is employment and tourism? What do those things look like in Colorado?
Well, again, cheerful news. The Chicken Littles were always saying that this is going to damage the reputation of Colorado and the tourist industry would go down. In fact, the tourism is up. As they say, the governor calls it a flourishing. Car rentals are up. Hotel occupancy rates are up. We estimate that directly 10,000 new, fairly well-paying jobs, $15-plus dollars an hour, have been created in the marijuana industry for both social use and medical use. And then, of course, there's other thousands and thousands of jobs of plumbers and electricians and folks who build stuff as they refitted these warehouses as grow-ops. I mean, if you've ever been in one, they require a lot of wiring and plumbing, et cetera. And this has been providing substantial employment all across Colorado. And if you're a warehouse owner, you are making lots of money because there is not one square foot of free warehouse anywhere in the Denver area, and it's scarce throughout the rest of the state. So lots of people are profiting. This is the American way. In fact, I just read that marijuana is now one of the five fastest growing industries in America. It just came out this week.
And that, of course, has implications, if it's legalized, on tax revenue, mm-hmm. which definitely increased in Colorado.
Yeah, they went from zero in 2013 to $60 million last year. This year, they're on track in 2015 to clear, free and clear, $100 million. This is not chump change. This is real money which can be used for whatever the needs of the government are, from education to, I know they have to build some schools and with that particular money. And so all good for the taxpayers of Colorado. And as I say, a drug which is demonstrably safer than alcohol is now also helping to pay the bills for the government of in Denver and Colorado.
And as you say, there's a $60 million increase in tax revenue. But really, you kind of have to double that if you think about the $60 million that we talked about a few minutes ago that was saved in law enforcement costs.
Oh, absolutely. And add the fact that now everybody, not everybody, most, the majority of workers in the marijuana industry are also paying state and federal income taxes. They're paying more Social Security taxes. They're paying normal taxes as opposed to being paid under the table and not taxed at all. So, again, this is a win, win, and win for everyone in Colorado combined. It really is helping shape the discussion, in fact, all around the world. You know, LEAP has sent me to Vienna the last couple of years, and I can tell you in the corridors, even if I don't speak Chinese, it's blah, 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 Colorado, blah, 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 Colorado. Everybody is talking about Colorado in the halls of the United Nations.
And a lot of people are going there basically for marijuana tourism. Is that, I mean, what does it look like? Have you been there? Have you witnessed this?
I've been there a couple times since the stores opened. I mean, as an outsider, I can't tell. You'd have to interview someone from a ski resort or a hotel chain or something like that. I did contact Frito-Lay about 6 months ago and said, could you give us your year-to-date sales in the last couple of years to see how many more bags of potato chips and whatnot they were selling? They would not give me that number. But from everything that I've read and heard about, Colorado is doing well with their tourist industry, and they are, again, reaping the rewards of going from an illicit market to a licit legal market.
We're talking to Howard Wooldridge from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Now, another piece of news is that the Mexican drug cartels, which used to be very active in Colorado, basically are not making their money anymore in Colorado. Obviously, it's a legal industry. It's kind of like what you have been talking about all along. I mean, we've been on the phone together since you were first here with your horse in 2005. Mm-hmm. And the comparison that's always been made is to prohibition in our nation's history, Al Capone and these sort of like gangster culture that was providing alcohol. We have a gangster culture now providing all kinds of drugs, including marijuana, namely these cartels. What does that look like in Colorado?
For the Mexican cartel connection, this is a full disaster for the cartels, the guys who cut off the heads, because the wholesale, from a representative of the United Nations from Mexico, told us in a meeting a year ago, the price of marijuana at the wholesale level in Mexico has dropped by half. This is really hurting the farmers in Mexico and, of course, the profits of the cartels to send their product across the border. Now, of course, the cartels have not disappeared from Colorado, but they certainly have lost the retail sales. Now they focus on the wholesale production and distribution. They will take marijuana produced in Colorado, illegally, I should add, and then send it to Iowa, Illinois, and Michigan. So they're still making money in that regard, but their operation has been hurt, and they're not happy. Also, to add insult to injury, in one sense, the Mexican cartels have been forced to import into Mexico the Colorado marijuana, which is now considered the best in the world because upper-middle-class Mexicans want to smoke Colorado weed as opposed to their own homegrown, not-so-good stuff.
Very interesting. Now, they have not made it into the dispensary business?
The short answer to that is no. The MED, the Marijuana Enforcement Division, that's the arm of the Colorado government, which overlooks and oversees the marijuana industry, they are doing, from what everything we know, an excellent job of keeping out nefarious criminals from all stripes from getting into the marijuana growing and selling business, much like the government does usually a pretty good job of keeping out bad guys from selling alcohol. The government is functioning from everything so far very well to keep these bad guys out.
So there are some other pieces of not-so-good news from Colorado with respect to the marijuana industry, and that is, one thing is there's an increase in the number of fires in people's homes caused by making hash oil.
Yeah, the news there is from 13 to 14, there was an increase of from like 11 to 32 fires in homes as muffinheads were trying to make their own hash oil in an enclosed area, which resulted in fires in the home. This is we'll have to see what the stats are for 15. The other bad news was there was a slight increase in kids who were getting hold of the edibles and going into an overdose situation. Of course, no kid ever died, but it certainly is very scary for the parents. And so what the state of Colorado did was they recognized the problem, and then beginning February 1st of this year, 2015, all marijuana sold in Colorado had to be in a child-proof package. And I checked those packages out myself. Let me tell you, this adult had a tough time trying to figure out how to open it. So the good news is the state of Colorado has taken care of the problem. And I should add that in raw numbers, the overdoses went from like 17 to 42. And you can compare that with over 1,200 calls for children who have swallowed bleach. So, yes, it's a serious problem, but it's nowhere near as bad as muffinhead parents leaving bleach out for, you know, little two-year-olds to drink.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the situation of edible marijuana is available in dispensaries, and it looks just like candy or brownies or things that kids love, and there's no way to recognize that it has anything inside of it.
That's correct.
Another thing that's happened is the number of homeless in Colorado, homeless people moving from other states, has increased. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, there's been no research, but just anecdotally, what we're seeing is a phenomena where people hear about Colorado as the promised land of you can smoke marijuana. So you have something of a think of a California gold rush in the 1800s, or even more closer to our times when a bunch of young people would go to San Francisco during the Vietnam War because it was a city of free love and drug, sex, and rock and roll. So you had a certain class of people who went to have that kind of a bohemian lifestyle, whatever. So we have seen an increase in homelessness in Colorado as these folks without money go to, quote, the promised land of more marijuana. And that's obviously a burden for local governments, but the burden is nowhere near what it used to be in terms of when you would put these people in jail, because then you're talking a direct cost of around $65 a day to put these people in jail for using marijuana, as opposed to now they have, you know, free soup kitchens and such. But that is, for the taxpayers anyway, that's much less of a burden than it would be to put them in jail for $60-$65 a day.
Interesting. One thing that's happening when we have a situation like what we have now, where a drug like marijuana is legal in Colorado, but it's not legal in New Mexico or Texas or Arizona or Utah or Wyoming, what is happening in those states? Is law enforcement, I mean, are they setting up checkpoints at the borders? I mean, what is the implication on neighboring states of Colorado's legalization?
Yeah. Oh, and before I answer that, I just want to say that every policy has potholes. Nobody on our side is promising a perfect world. So, yes, you're going to see potholes here and potholes there, but compared to an illegal market, it's much, much better. Your neighboring states around Colorado are complaining too loudly about the fact that their courtrooms and their evidence rooms are filled with cases involving small amounts of marijuana from Colorado, or even large amounts, because let's not lose sight of the fact that Colorado is producing a huge amount of marijuana for export. Illegal. It's an illegal operation, but they are producing it for export I've written now 30 states are receiving some or all of their marijuana from Colorado. And this is where the cartels and their distribution networks come into play. On the other hand, no, the states have not set up checkpoints, et cetera. I believe that would be, well, it's not illegal, but almost, but they have not. But they make traffic stops, and invariably they run into the marijuana, and it's causing them a lot of heartache and a lot of police time. But again, this is their choice. I mean, if they legalize it, then they wouldn't have the problem either. And we're going to see this in 2016 when five more states go Colorado, and then after that, you'll see more states go Colorado. And then we'll see eventually a world where, you know, a majority of the states will go that way. And if the other governments don't want to legalize, regulate, and tax it, that is their choice and their burden, not the people of Colorado.
Now, Colorado has a situation where 60% of the marijuana sold in 2014 was through stores. It was legally sold through the system that has been set up of dispensaries, both medical and recreational. That means that 40% of the retail market for marijuana in Colorado is still illegal. What's going on? What does that look like? How is it changing?
Well, the good news is that number is expected to change in 2015 when the numbers come out in February. The price at the stores, both for social use or recreational use and for medical use, has been dropping throughout 2015 as supply catches up with demand. This is a straightforward capitalist, you know, 101, supply and demand. And now the supply is almost caught up to demand, so the price has been dropping steadily throughout the year. So we fully expect to see that the percentage sold in a state-regulated store is going to go up to probably a good 70%, another 10% loss for the folks in the illicit market and again, hurting criminals and cartels. When will it reach 100% or close to 100%? That is unknown. Taxation has a lot plays a role here, where the 25% tax on social use marijuana, it certainly makes it easier for the illicit market to compete very, very well. But this will continue, I believe, a slow and steady trend, as we've seen, to it nearly eliminate the illegal sales.
Do you have a sense of what the implications would be for a state like New Mexico if New Mexico were to legalize marijuana? I mean, how would it compare to what's going on in Colorado? What would be the same? What would be different?
Well, certainly it's up to the people of Santa Fe and the state itself to decide what kind of rules and regulations. I would highly recommend almost copying the Colorado model, because one of the things you want to do is eliminate those illegal sales and eliminate kids selling it. And the way to do that is to have a taxation policy and other policies, which makes it a lot easier and whatever for citizens to buy it legally, so you can destroy that market for illegal sales. But at the end of the day, if you right now travel to up I-25 and you get out of Raton and you go across the border to Trinidad and Pueblo and Colorado Springs, you're as a normal citizen, you're not going to notice any changes. It's just Colorado with sunshine and colorful citizens and ski slopes and bicycle paths, et cetera. The only difference is every once in a while you see a little storefront that has a green leaf in it or something. The really outwardly, you simply can't tell the difference. And this is what struck the French and Germans and some other countries that have gone to Colorado to investigate, saying, we really don't see any change that's worth noticing in the state as a whole.
Is there a cultural shift where people are using marijuana instead of alcohol? Do you see any of that?
The short answer is there's no research, and they have not heard any anecdotal stories in Colorado where that is to be true. Last year, the first year of legalization, beer sales were up 0.6%. However, that might be because of the increase in tourism, because people that are 20, 25 years old may smoke a joint in the evening, but during the day have a beer or two. So, again, there's no research and no solid information one way or the other.
When Colorado legalized marijuana, did they also let out of jail people who had been convicted on marijuana charges?
No. Colorado has not done that. I don't believe any state has done it. The only caveat to that Mary Charlotte, is states are considering making it easier for those convicted of simple possession to have their records expunged. This is going on in a number of states, including Colorado, but that legislation has not passed.
We're talking to Howard Wooldridge, retired police detective, co-founder of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And we've been talking about what's going on in Colorado, but this is a nationwide movement, the movement to legalize marijuana in various ways for various uses. You are based in Washington, D.C. now. You're a lobbyist, and you said that coming very soon, five more states are kind of in line to legalize marijuana. Which states are we talking about, and what are they doing? What does it look like?
Well, California and Arizona will have it on the ballot in 2015. And if obviously Arizona's successful, you'll get hemmed in from two sides now with states that are legal. The other one is Nevada, a very close neighbor of yours. And then the other two are Massachusetts and Maine, which for the eastern seaboard means those two will become the Colorado for the entire eastern I-95 corridor.
They're expected to pass in those states, in other words.
Yeah, those states are showing in the upwards of 58-62% will go Colorado at any legal regulate tax ballot initiative.
You know, as states do that, will it hurt Colorado's tourism, do you think? I mean, right now people are going to Colorado to buy and to use marijuana. Will that decrease? Will that be an economic downturn a little bit in that industry for them?
Well, certainly if you like to ski in northern New Mexico and the issue is you want to smoke legal marijuana après ski, you would have less incentive to go off to Colorado ski resorts if you can consume the drug up in your ski resorts. My sense is that Colorado being the first in this establishing itself as a worldwide center, actually worldwide, for this phenomena of legal marijuana, legal cannabis, if you will, for the sale, they're going to maintain a certain portion of that. But certainly, as other states like New Mexico would come online as legal regulated, you would get back some of those tourists who went off only because of the marijuana issue.
Now, from your perspective, have you seen, for example, tobacco companies or big conglomerates like Monsanto looking at the big so-called big marijuana, you know, like big ag, big tobacco, that kind of thing, for their future as legalization increases?
Short answer is no. Up until this point, in the four states that have legalized it, there is no single giant corporation or, if you will, like a Budweiser or Marlboro, which has come into the marijuana industry and started buying up all the little stores and controlling, you know, a large percentage of the market share. This has developed and continues to be very much like wineries, like in Napa Valley, where you have people who produce only, you know, 5,000 gallons of wine a year, sort of thing. The real boutique type situations, and I believe that trend will stay with us for at least another couple of years, if not longer, because people are developing their tastes and their brand names as we speak. Willie Nelson is going to come out in 2015 with a brand called Willie's Reserve. Snoop Dogg is coming out with his a brand of marijuana, which may become a popular seller because of the popularity of those two singers. But certainly the phenomena of a giant corporation coming in and taking over the market, it's not even on the horizon at this point. Nobody can see that, if indeed it's even out there.
Very interesting. The one thing that we did see in Ohio was the defeat of a legalization effort there. But it was really an interesting case because, I mean, it was the closest thing that I think that we've seen to a number of business people trying to get a monopoly and trying to have it not be a mom and pop, not be a family grower situation. Explain that to us. What happened in Ohio?
Well, Ohio had these 10 millionaire investors who wanted to make money, lots of money, in the marijuana field. And Ohio is a state that was showing a polling around 56-58% in favor of legalized regulate tax, go Colorado. And they put together an initiative that would allow those 10 to divide the state up and make a lot of the money growing it and selling it. And it was utterly crushed, despite normal people who wanted to legalize, go to Colorado. They did not like the idea of 10 companies making all the money. They didn't like the idea there was no room for mom-and-pop boutique marijuana grows. And and it's probably just a general our impression was, receiving it from the guy who spent the money, was that it was just a general bad taste in your mouth of starting a situation which just nobody liked at the beginning, which was to have a big monopoly type situation in Ohio. So it was utterly crushed, like 65-35, which is an overwhelming defeat.
And it's such an interesting defeat to me, because basically the spirit of democracy seems to be alive and well in Ohio, where they would rather defeat a bad legalization that gives a monopoly to 10 people than to have the marijuana legally available that's grown by those 10 people. They'd actually rather wait and do it right to where everybody has a chance to enter this market.
What you just said is exactly correct. Wanted to do it right from the get-go, and Ohio was going to do it wrong from the get-go, and it was utterly crushed. You will see that as an experiment, and I believe you will see no one else try to do it that way because of the utter failure of the 2015 attempt in Ohio.
Another problem that is a very serious problem, and I would love your update, since you were in Washington, D.C., of how we're handling this as a nation, is the question of, okay, you've got Colorado where marijuana is perfectly legal, but you've got the United States of America, in which Colorado and every other state exists, where marijuana is absolutely legal. It's classified as being on a par with heroin as a dangerous drug. As we know, federal law supersedes state law. How is this conflict being addressed?
At the international level, I listened to our ambassador this spring in Vienna say when the United States was absolutely slam dunked and chastised by the world body, saying you guys are way out of compliance because of Colorado and Washington, and the response was from our ambassador was basically verbal gymnastics, saying, well, because the United States as a whole maintains its prohibition, we're not out of compliance. And basically said, it's just a matter of semantics and lawyers who, you know, whatever. So that's the world part. At the national level, certainly the next president, and Chris Christie has made it plain that he is president. He's going to bust every store in Colorado and Washington and Oregon. He's going to bust them all. Other people who are running for president said, I will respect the 10th Amendment and states' rights and allow Colorado and the others to do what they're doing now without having federal DEA agents come in and arrest people who are selling out of a legal store. So this is very much still in flux. This is still very much a possibility. Things can go a little bit the wrong way. But in the sweep of history, the Go Colorado movement is not going to stop. The people will vote the way they want, and if the federal government interferes, that's their prerogative. But the people of this country continue to vote yes to take this out of the illegal market and put it into the legal market.
What has happened, if anything, during the Obama administration in terms of what they're saying about states' rights, essentially, to have legal marijuana?
Well, the Obama administration has been, by neglect, very helpful. They have simply said, if you want to do it, and there's now 24 states with medical marijuana, for example, you can do it, and we will not interfere. And of course, with Colorado and the other three, they will not interfere. And that's been very, very helpful for us to showcase to the world what a legal, regulated tax market looks like and how well it functions. So the Obama administration has been passively good. Actively, they have been just not good at all. It's still Schedule One, and on the congressional level, where I advocate for a 10th Amendment approach, you don't have the administration folks out there beating the drum to try to get more votes to pass a bill which would repeal the 1937 law. They're essentially neutral, and which is better than being actively against it, but it's certainly they have not been actively helpful in passing good legislation.
I think this really points to an interesting split in the Republican Party between those who believe in a kind of states' rights approach and more of a kind of libertarian live and let live approach on the one hand, and those who believe in a very strong anti-drug, war on drugs, law enforcement approach on the other hand, both within that party.
Oh, absolutely. The split in the Republican Party is very sharp. However, the good news is because of the changing generations, the younger generation, the millennials, the Gen Xers, et cetera, they are trending much more in favor of the 10th Amendment, states' rights, and, of course, personal freedom, probably best way to put it of all. So folks at 30 are like 5-6 to 1 in favor of gay marriage. They're also 3.5 to 1 in favor of treating marijuana like beer. So this is also a generational shift, which is allowing us to have more and more success both at the state and national levels. And this will continue because as the folks who are 75, 85 die, don't vote anymore, and the young person takes over, that's what's going to happen. But in the Republican Party itself, this causes some consternation. But again, more of the young guys coming on and women coming on in the United States Congress are voting 10th Amendment, saying this should be a state matter. And the handwriting is on the wall. If you're a politician, you do not stand in front of a 60% issue that the voters want. If the voters want it by 60%, you stand in front of that tsunami at your peril.
Now, wasn't there just a spending bill that defunded the Department of Justice initiatives to attack state marijuana laws?
Yes. Yes, the Senate committees voted to keep the DEA from going after any state legal medical marijuana. So now for the second year in a row, the Congress has voted for and the president signed a bill that denies the DEA the funding to go after a state legal medical marijuana operation or patient. And the courts, by the way, just 2 months ago backed that situation when the DEA ignored the law. They went in and busted a dispensary in California, and the judge smacked them on the hand real hard, saying, you cannot do that, and dismiss the case. So the courts have backed up the will of the Congress, and the DEA has learned that if it's a state legal medical marijuana operation, it's hands off for the next fiscal year again.
You mentioned Chris Christie. Talk about some of the other candidates and how they are expressing themselves on drug legalization and specifically marijuana legalization.
Well, certainly Rand Paul has made it crystal clear that he would apply the 10th Amendment to marijuana policy. Other candidates like Kasich and Jeb Bush have said, well, they'll probably respect states' rights. Chris Christie and Rubio have come out very clearly saying, I will bust the people who are selling marijuana for any reason, meaning, of course, the state store or the social use or the medical use. So Rubio and Chris Christie are the Neanderthals of the last century, the dinosaurs, and the rest of them have been giving at least lip service to the 10th Amendment and states' rights. What they would do, however, in once president is unknown. George Bush, 43, promised to take a hands-off on medical marijuana, and he and his DEA went in and busted everybody they could. So what they say in the campaign trail isn't necessarily what they're going to do once they take the oath of office.
What about the Democratic candidates?
The Democratic side, Barry Sanders, is certainly the best. He's called for a full repeal of the 1937 law and make this a states' rights issue. Hillary Clinton has been slowly dragging her feet because of pressure from the Bernie crowd. She now has come out with a statement saying she's in favor of states' rights for medical marijuana only. And certainly her record in the Senate, I talked to her aides when she was in the Senate, and of course her husband, Bill, were horrible They were big believers in the drug war, big believers in lock them all up, as was Martin O'Malley, the third candidate still running. He was a big drug warrior himself, but not our friend. So only Bernie Sanders is excellent, like a Rand Paul. The other two reluctantly have come on for, you know, medical, and that's it.
We're talking to Howard Wooldridge of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Tell us a little bit more about how you got into this whole line of work in the first place.
Well, after I retired and hung up my badge and my gun, I wanted to get involved in something important. And long story, I was recruited by a gentleman in Dallas, Texas, and I've been here ever since. They saw me as a person who's bilingual and would be able to go to rotaries and speaking as a police officer, carry more authority, more weight than a civilian would when talking about this very volatile and controversial policy. And that was 18 years ago. And then, as you know, after I rode the horse of Misty across America for the second time, then I moved to Washington, D.C. to represent LEAP here in the halls of Congress. And this policy touches foreign affairs, it touches education, it touches inner-city development, it touches human rights, it touches so many things that I said, this is the place to be.
When you first rode your horse across country and you were here at the Santa Fe Bacon Company, you were doing things like talking to John Birch societies and Elks clubs and Eagles and folks like that. And it was interesting because as a police officer and as a guy in a cowboy hat on a horse, you also had kind of more clout with that community than if somebody, you know, an urban person were to go into those communities and talk about the same thing. Have you seen changes and shifts in that demographic?
Yes, slight to small changes in that demographic. Again, those about 66 and older are 3, 4, 5 to 1 against what I'm trying to do. So that's difficult. But most of the younger people now, that we're into our third generation of people involved growing up with the drug war and prohibition, they are the ones who are saying, this has been a trillion dollar failure where drugs and are cheaper, stronger, readily available now into the third generation. They see this as a horrific waste of tax dollars, if nothing else, besides the human cost, which is horrific also with the jails being built as opposed to junior colleges. People understand now that it's not just people getting locked up for selling marijuana or cocaine. This affects your child's tuition in college. As we spend so much of our resources on the wrong things, it affects other parts of the budgets. So that's why we're seeing less and less resistance to the LEAP message of these drugs are too dangerous to leave in the hands of criminals, and that a much more rational and humanistic approach is to legalize, regulate all drugs. And then if you have a drug problem, you see a doctor, not a judge.
One thing that we haven't talked about is other drugs. I mean, when we first started having this conversation, you were talking about legalizing not only marijuana, but heroin and methamphetamine and cocaine and crack cocaine and everything else, which is really scary to a lot of people. I mean, we pretty much know that marijuana, if used in a reasonable way, and it's pretty hard to abuse it compared to alcohol, is a pretty relatively safe drug. I mean, no drug is entirely safe, but as things go, it doesn't have any of the problems of, for example, methamphetamine, which is so dangerous and addictive. How do you compare those things, and what's the conversation on other drugs right now?
Well, comparing them is something past my pay grade. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a pharmacist. The actual physiological and psychological impacts of these drugs are known best to the science community, the community of doctors. I can tell you that the British doctors, the best in the country, were brought together by their government 5 years ago, and they came up with a list of the 20 most dangerous drugs available in the UK. And no surprise to me, alcohol was the most dangerous drug for both the user and those around them. And then next was like heroin, cocaine, tobacco. Marijuana was number 8 on the list. But the point is that all drugs are less, even methamphetamine is less dangerous, dose for dose, than whiskey. So that's why it's easy for me to advocate for the ending of all prohibitions, because at the end of the day, one of the things we don't talk about in polite society is that every day across America, 20 teenagers, young people, are shot. 5 of those are shot dead because of their employment in the drug trade. This is almost a Sandy Hook, a San Bernardino. Every day in America, where kids are shot and killed because they're selling drugs. And they're not selling alcohol. They're not selling tobacco. They're selling illegal drugs. And this is immoral and preventable. And after that, as we chase the green plants and the white powders, we're missing pedophiles. We're missing people blowing up marathons and Christmas parties in San Bernardino because tens and tens of thousands of trained police officers and federal agents are chasing green plants and white powders and missing the other public safety threats. And that is what drives me to work every day, is because my profession should focus on what we're good at, which is public safety.
What you're saying makes me think about one of the kind of untold stories about drug gangs in the United States, which is that a lot of the people who run them are actually really good business people, and had they grown up in a place where they had a good education and access to good colleges and business schools and things like that, they'd be CEOs. Do you see a shift where people who are running illegal gangs, I mean serious, crazy, dangerous gangs in big cities in the United States, would actually go into business legally?
Well, the good news is, in terms of the retail sales survey show, about 90% of people who sell drugs off sidewalks or actually deliver them door to door are doing it part time. And those people will go back to their normal jobs. The managers, if you will, which I think is what you're talking about, certainly if you can run a 50-person drug operation, you could run a Taco Bell in terms of management skills. Because you need the same management skills. For those who have seen the HBO series, The Sopranos. I mean, these guys run a business, and they have the same problems of management and worker morale and compensation as anybody else. So, yes, they certainly could, because they have the same skill set as you need to run a Taco Bell.
I don't mean a Taco Bell. I mean a marijuana dispensary.
Oh, yes, they could, although the laws in most of these states is precluding someone with a felony conviction. Now, if you were never convicted of a drug crime, then certainly you could move right over into a legal operation, sure. But it would be a totally different business model, because now you got to you can't shoot your competition. Today, drug gangs shoot each other because the competition, that's the best way to get rid of it, is just to shoot them. Well, in a legal market, Taco Bell can't go out and shoot Burger King, no.
Right, right. Well, much more to talk about, and I look forward to continuing the conversation, and I appreciate that we've been able to talk about this for the last 10 years over the course of so many different changes. Howard Wooldridge is a retired police detective. He's co-founder of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, which is on the web at leap.cc. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
You're welcome. And I just leave you with one word, one phrase, that in my experience as a street cop, the war on drugs, modern prohibition, has been the most destructive, dysfunctional, and immoral policy since slavery and Jim Crow. We have got to end it as soon as possible.
Howard, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.